Introduce our main speaker for this evening, Ellen P. from San Diego.
Oh my God, there's a lot of you. Look at all these alcoholics I haven't had the privilege of meeting yet. I think that's great. So my name is Ellen, and I'm an alcoholic. Drugs are also a big part of my story, but it says in the book that when I take in anything that is mind-altering, it creates the craving of the body and the obsession of the mind. And the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. And I have a very strong desire not only to stop, but to stay stopped drinking, because I know that if I picked up a drink, it would very soon lead me back to the drugs. So I got asked to speak here a while back, and I hadn't been asked to speak in a long time. And I was thinking back about, you know, when's the last time I really stood in front of a group this big and told my story? And I think it was very early in my recovery, because I distinctly remember thinking that it had gone so well, I bet I have a career on the speaker circuit. And 22 years later, I finally get asked to speak again. Yeah, first of all, I want to say, Carlos, congratulations on your 90 days. That's a lot of days. And Sharon, where's Sharon? Happy birthday on 3 years. That's a long time. Congratulations. I don't remember 90 days. I do remember 3 years. So, what it was like? Well, what it was like is, can I just say everything AJ said? Because AJ nailed it. I was born not feeling comfortable in my own skin. I was always, you know, one off. Part of it is my dad was an episodic alcoholic. We'd have a good job, we'd have a nice house, I'd go to school. And then he'd go on a bender and tell his boss off, get fired, and then we'd move to the next town up the road. And that's hard on a kid. So I learned very quickly that I'm already shy, I'm already having a hard time making friends, and then when I make a friend, we move. So the only constant for me was school. So school was the first mind-altering drug that I used. So where to go from there? So I did really well in school. Oh, the other thing is, I've been this tall since I was 14. Wore glasses, braces on my teeth, good grades. You know, it's the kind of girl everybody won. So I just stayed in my little cocoon. And then my senior year in high school, the first boy that had ever paid any attention to me became my high school boyfriend, and then my husband. So now I had a new higher power. He was my higher power. And then I had two boys, and they became my higher power. So being a mother, taking care of the house, those were my mind-altering substances. Anything so I didn't have to feel. When I got here, I used to say I wouldn't know an honest emotion if it bit me in the ass. And I'm very happy to say that's not the way it is today. So I went to college in Humboldt State. Some of you may, the name may Ring a bell. So we lived in Humboldt County, and my ex-husband worked for Caltrans, and I started college the same year my oldest son started high school. And we graduated the same year, and we both left home the following year. So when I got divorced, we lived in a very small town, and the first date I had, this is before ATM machines, the first date I had, my date says, I got to stop by Dell's Liquors and cash a check. And I go, okay, so I'm sitting in the car, and who walks by to cash a check for his date but my ex-husband? And they come out talking together. They're just in a... And he gets in the car and he goes, I just met the nicest guy. Glad you like him. So the following year, I did my first geographic. I moved to Hawaii. I took 1 year nursing assignment for Hawaii, and I moved with a friend of mine. And I thought, this is where all the that hole in my soul was going to get filled. I hadn't found alcohol. I hadn't found drugs. But I just needed to, I'll go someplace new and start all over again, and it'll be okay. And, of course, it wasn't. So I had a roommate whose boyfriend was part of the GAO, the Government Accounting Office. And he used to go from Hawaii to Southeast Asia all the time with a diplomatic pouch. So guess what he brought us? So I'm going to parties at his house only because my roommate is his girlfriend. I didn't get invited to parties on my own. And it was like the second party, and I realized everybody's going to the bedroom. What's going on in the bedroom? So I go investigate, and oh, I love cocaine. That was good shit. So I go to a few parties, and they say, you know, everybody chips in, and it's your turn. And I go, okay, just tell me what I owe. And they tell me, well, first of all, I said, I'll write you a check. No checks. So they tell me how much it is, and I don't know if they ripped me off or not, but it was 2 weeks' salary. It was half a month's pay. So I paid him off and never went to one of those parties again. So I was still a cucumber. I wasn't a pickle then because I was too cheap to go. So I found out that my oldest son and his wife were going to have a baby, so I moved back to the mainland. I'd been here about 4 days. Everything I owned fit in the back of my car, and my mom had a stroke. So I went to the little town where she lived, and to be with her and to take care of her, and I got a job in the local hospital. Well, it wasn't hard, because when I walked into her room, they all said, oh, you must be Pat's daughter. She's told us all about you. She says you're a wonderful nurse. So it wasn't hard to get a job there. And for a while, things were better. I had a purpose. But very quickly, it wasn't better. The anxiety returned. I describe it. You've seen the Kilauea volcano that's going off in Hawaii. I felt like that was in my gut, just throwing off hot rocks. I can remember being so anxious that on my lunch break, I would go out through the double doors, and the anxiety would hit me before I could get to the elevators, and I'd have to turn around and go back. Because through those double doors, I had a purpose. I had a reason for being, and out there I didn't. There were times that I'd get off work, I'd go home, and I wouldn't get up again until it was time to go back to work, and that might be 3 days later. So I thought, okay, I can't be here anymore. I saw an ad in a magazine for Balboa Navy Hospital needed ER nurses. So I called the agency, and it turned out to be a gal that I'd worked with in Hawaii, and she says, sure, you can have a job. Come on down. So there's geographic number 3. So I get down here, get a job at Balboa. Once again, everything's good for a while, and then it's not. So I was living in PB. I still live in PB, and I was riding my bicycle, and I got hit by a car. I went ass over tea kettle over the handlebars. And I went to the doctor, and he said, you know, there's this new pain medicine on the market that's not addictive. It's called Vicodin. Okay. It probably took me about 2 weeks to figure out that if the bottle said take 2 pills every 4 hours, you take 4 pills every 2 hours. And like AJ talked about when he had that first drink and that first joint, he knew he was home. He felt like he could breathe again. Now, I'd smoked pot. I mean, I'm from Humboldt County. I'd done cocaine. I had drunk my share. But nothing ever gave me that ease that the Vicodin did. I know sometimes people on pot, they're like, oh, I love you, man. I never got that way. But let me tell you, on Vicodin, it was like, I love you. And I know you love me because I can see it in your eyes. So for about 2 years, no, it wasn't 2 years. So for about a year, I'm on a pink cloud. And then I go to the doctor, and he says, you know, it's been a year. I don't think you should need these anymore. What? That's what I said. What? Yeah. So, well, I work in an emergency room. And I'm so trusted that I write the discharge instructions and the discharge prescriptions. So I get my own little prescription pad in my pocket, and every time we discharge a patient with pain medications, I'd write myself a duplicate prescription in their name. And I'd have their address so I look and see what zip code they're in. And I'd write myself a prescription, and I'd go to a pharmacy in their zip code, and I'd get it filled, praying that the pharmacist didn't know this person. I had a little notebook where I kept a diary of what pharmacies I'd gone to, how many refills I gave myself, how many times I'd been there, and I'm keeping track, right? So that came to a screeching halt. I get off work one morning, I'm working nights, and I realize I don't have any pills. Oops. That's not what I said, but... So I whip out my handy-dandy prescription pad, write myself a script, and then drive around and look for a pharmacy that's open at 8 o'clock in the morning. This is before their 24 hours and all that stuff. So I find a little mom-and-pop pharmacy up in North Park. And it's, you know, it's got one wall of cosmetics and one wall of, you know, feminine hygiene products and the counter. So I go in and I present this guy with my script, and he's looking at it, and I'm still in my scrubs, but nothing says my name. And he says, why didn't you get filled at Balboa? And I said, have you ever been to the pharmacy at Balboa first thing in the morning? The veterans are out the door. I don't have time to wait. I work nights. I have to go home and get some sleep. So he goes, oh, okay. So, like I said, I'd always written it in the name of a patient. So if they called and said, did you see so-and-so last night? Did you send them out with a script for this? And they could say yes. So he's taking a long time, and he's looking at this, and he's looking at me. So I'm kind of wandering around, And here's the big plate glass windows in the front of the store. And there's one of those old-fashioned postcard things, the carousel, right by the front door. So I'm pretending I'm looking at the postcards, but I'm watching him in the window, right? All of a sudden, I see he's on the phone, and he's got the script. And he's looking at me, and then he's looking back. And I go, I am fucked. So the door had those big brass bells on them. So I dropped to my knees, put my hands around the bells, and snuck out the door. And the windows were down to here, so I have to crawl on my hands and knees. And as soon as I'm past the windows, I sprint, get in my car, and drive away. And my heart is pounding like a hummingbird. And I get about two blocks down the road, and I pass two police cars going in the opposite directions. Now, I don't know that they're for me, but I know they're for me. Besides, if he had come out, the pharmacist had come out and saw me get in the car to drive away, I had an RX-7 with a license plate that says Nurse RX. And a frame that said, My Prescription for Happiness. Wasn't funny. So I have to go back to work that night. Okay, thank you. So I have to go back to work that night. And so I go home and I'm laying in the bed and I'm going, I have to sleep, I have to sleep. Is that somebody at the door? I have to sleep, I have to sleep. Well, who's that? Needless to say, I got very little sleep. So the next day I go back to work and I'm thinking, what a fool I've been. I work in an ER. There's Demerol and morphine. So I work in an ER. I take the cardiac and the trauma patients because they're the ones that get drugs. So the drugs come in pre-filled syringe, and you can get 2 milligrams, 5 milligrams, or 10 milligrams. Didn't matter what the order was. I always signed out 10. So if the order was for 2, you got your 2. I always gave my patients their drugs, but then the other 8 went in my pocket. So I put it in my soda can. That didn't do much. And then I injected it in my thigh, and that didn't do much. By the fourth night, I'm shooting at IV. Anybody know what a heparin lock is? I put one in my ankle because we wore short sleeve scrubs. I couldn't have track marks. So I put it in my ankle underneath my socks. So long story short, it's about this time that I realize I'm a pickle. I am no longer a cucumber. I am a pickle. Because if I kept thinking, why do I keep feeling like I've got the flu? I don't understand this. But when I go to work, I feel better. Oh. No. So now it slowly dawns on me that I can't get high. I have to have the drugs just not to be sick. I'm risking my life. I'm risking my license. By now, I'm working 2 full-time ER jobs because I can't have days off. Tons of money, but no. I have this hole in my soul I could drive a truck through. I've heard it described as a God-sized hole. So the last day I worked in the ER, before I go to work, I'm sitting on my patio drinking my Dr. Pepper, smoking my cigarette, and praying, God, please help me. Just help me, God. I don't know what to do. So I go to work. The charge nurse, the night charge nurse, says, oh, I'm so glad you're here early. She throws me the narcotics keys, and she goes, the patient in this room needs Percocet and morphine. And I think, well, God doesn't want me to stop today. And I don't know if any of you can identify, but as soon as I had the drugs in my pocket, I was well. So I wait for a while, I go to the bathroom, and I'm just going to do 1 milligram of the morphine to feel better. Well, maybe two. I've got six, right? Because she got four and I got six. And, well, three. Three is better. Well, shit, I've used half of it. I might as well use it all, right? Well, I come to, and I'm sprawled out on the toilet. I've passed out. The leg with the heparin lock is under the stall door. And I come to, and I don't know how long I've been there. And I don't know if anybody's seen me. So I stay in there a little while longer, and then I come out, and I'm looking. Nobody seems to be looking at me sideways, so I figure out I'm okay. Except they come and tell me, this is, Christmas is like tomorrow or the day after. You don't have to work between Christmas and New Year's. You always work the holidays. We don't know why. We're going to give you time off to go see your family. So then I real fast call up the other hospital. No, we're staffed. We're good. That was the last day I worked in the ER. I went home, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know about this program. The only way I prayed was what I call teabag praying when I got in hot water. I didn't know where to go. I just knew I wanted the pain to stop. So on my belly button birthday, I looked through all my lab coats, and I come with a vial of Ersatin. If you know what that is, it's a synthetic Valium, and it knocks out your respiratory system. So I write a letter to my kids, I clean my house, I take a shower, I change my sheets, I get into bed, and I try to slam it because I want to OD. And this is on my belly button birthday. One of the corpsmen from work comes by to take me out for a drink for my birthday, and my roommate lets him in. He knocks on the door, and I said, go away, I want to die. And we say in the ER, not on my shift, you don't. It's too goddamn much paperwork. Dave Peckman, big old Nebraska farm boy, only, besides my brother, the only man I know that can pick me up and throw me over his shoulder. Now, I don't remember any of this because Versetta is also a great amnesiac. He tells me later that he's looking in the kitchen, slamming cabinets, and I ask him, what are you looking for? He said, I'm looking for the coffee. And I said, I don't drink coffee. And he goes, what kind of goddamn ER nurse are you? You don't drink coffee. So he puts me in the shower, puts me in the bathtub, turns the shower on, cold water, and calls my best friend, and she tells him to take me to the ER. Now, I don't remember any of this, but I get cleared in the ER. I'm told they send me over to Mesa Vista to the observation ward. And I wake up about 8 hours later to somebody crying, Mama! Mama! And I look over, and in the next bed is a woman that's got to be 90. And I'm going, what the fuck? Is this hell? No, it turned out it was heaven. It really turned out it was heaven because they kept me in there for detox. My psychiatrist said, if you don't turn yourself into diversion, I will. Diversion is a program for healthcare professionals to retain and our license. And so for the first 2 years, I used to say, oh, I'm a self-referral. I turned myself in. Well, I turned myself in because she said, if you don't, I will. Not quite the same thing. So I go through diversion, I sign up for diversion, and you know, my sobriety is of the educational variety. I think I'm smarter than the average bear. And it says, you know, self-knowledge will avail us nothing. Nothing. I mean, I'm intelligent, and I thought I was going to be able to talk my way out of this. Thank God I couldn't. That diversion program kept my ass in a seat long enough for the miracle to happen. AA saved my life, but diversion saved my ass. I was also a rule follower. So if diversion says you have to go to 5 meetings a week, you have to have a sponsor, you have to have a therapist, your sponsor has to send in a report every month, it's like check, 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 check. Because I had a 5-year plan. I was going to do this long enough to get my license back without restrictions. And then I was, okay, I understand now. I'm bodily and mentally different than my fellows. I understand. I've got this. I'll stay here. You know, I'll be good. I'll follow your rules. I'll do the check boxes. And as soon as I get my license back, I'm gone. I go to my first evaluation, and they tell me I can't work with my license at all for a year. And by now, nursing is not what I do. It's who I am. That's my only identity. And I said, you might as well take me out in the parking lot and shoot me. And they said, you'll understand. And I didn't. So they said I could get a job as long as I didn't need my license. I tell you, God has my back. I applied for jobs. They turned me down at CVS. They turned me down at... I applied for a job as a truck driver, a delivery driver for a florist. They wouldn't hire me. I'm on disability. I've got 9 months on disability. And when I could have used that time to get solid in my program, I used that time trying to find a job, because without a job, I had no identity. Who the hell was I? I had about 9 months when I got a job. I went to work for Quest Diagnostics, the laboratory, and I worked for them for 13 years. By the way, by the time I got my license back unrestricted, I had been here long enough, thank God, to know that was not a good place for me. To go back to the ER and the ICU? No. As my sponsor tells me, you hang around a barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. Now, I've known nurses that have gone back to the ER and the ICU, but, you know, more power to them. I wasn't willing to chance that. So I have worked occupational health, employee health, workers' comp, all those things that I can use my medical training, but I've never carried NARC keys. So that was a gift, because I'll tell you, working 12 hours in the ER, the last day I worked at UCSD in the ER, which is a teaching hospital, and what they don't tell you is the nurses do the teaching. I was working the 3 to 11 shift. My replacement hadn't shown up yet. I don't know if you know that fourth-year medical school students graduate in June or May, and in June they're first-year residents. Now, they didn't know any more than they did a month ago, but now they're residents, right? And they're going to manage my cases. So I've got this little pitcher standing here telling me how to run my cardiac patient, and I thought, I got to do something else. So I was fortunate that I got a job. Now, recovery, because diversion said, what I got?
You got your last 30.
Okay, thank you. So diversion said I had to go to X number of meetings, I had to have a therapist. So I did all that because it was a checklist. But my head wasn't in it. My heart wasn't in it. I did the steps, but they were surface. My mind, I had reservations. I knew that this was just, these were check boxes for me. And I never heard my story. My sponsor kept saying, you'll hear your story. You know, identify with the similarities, not the differences. And I think for the first year, all I heard was the differences. I didn't hear my story because you guys use street drugs and I use pharmaceuticals. And I always had sterile needles. Never had a DUI, never went to jail. So I was looking at the differences. And I had about a year sober, and I went to the Saturday night speakers meeting in La Jolla, and there was a nurse that came down from L.A. and told her story, and she told my story. I just sat there with my mouth open and my heart pounding because she told my story, including the part where if you pat me on the head, my pants fall down. Because I've had four husbands, but one of them was mine. So as soon as I got out of that meeting, I called my sponsor, and I'm going, guess what, guess what? She goes, what, you heard your story? Yes, shit, how'd you know? She says, because you had to eventually. And that was the turning point for me. That's when I started identifying with the feelings, the emotions. Didn't matter if you're male or female, if you were young or old or, you know, alcoholic, drug, didn't matter. When we talk about what got us here or why we used, it was because I didn't want to be who I was, and I never wanted to be where I was. I didn't want to feel. So anything to block out those feelings. And now I identify with that. And it took me a while to realize that that's what you guys meant when you called it pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. Shit, there's a name for it. So I have a sponsor. I've had the same sponsor for about 15 years. She has a sponsor. I have a home group, Friday night women's meeting in UTC. She comes, her sponsor comes. You know, I have the life that I always wanted to have. My first sponsor had me write down, you know, what I wanted my life to be like at 5 years. And by the time I got to 5 years, my life had so far surpassed that, I couldn't even believe it. A fellowship has grown up around me. I have really, really good friends. I have a posse. Never had that before. Never. We take care of each other. I go to regular meetings regularly. I'm currently working a sixth and seventh step. I keep thinking those character defects, the list is going to be shorter next time. And I got to tell you, it doesn't get much shorter. I think maybe they're not as severe. I have asked God to remove them, but I forget the humble part. It's like, remove these defects of character. Doesn't work. I heard a woman say, and I really resonated with that, she said, my mind would kill me if it didn't need me for transportation. And that's still the case today, sometimes. But you know what? I have found a new happiness and a peace that I did not know existed. If you're new, please, please stay. If you're not feeling it, go to more meetings, talk to more people. This is the softer, easier way. I've rebuilt my relationship with my kids. I have grandkids. I have great-grandkids. When I go up there, they're in Northern California. I don't know why they won't get the hell out of Humboldt County. When I go back up there, it's like when I say, okay, I can stay until Wednesday, and my son will say, well, where the hell do you think you're going? I said, I'm going home. Why don't you stay here? You don't have anything at home. Oh, yes, I do. Oh, yes, I do. I'm retired. I'm single. I live at the beach. I have a bicycle. What more do I want? My grandkids come in the summer and spend 2 weeks with me each? Huh? No, I only had four. I stopped. I don't do that anymore. That showed up on my fourth step too many times. So all I can say is I am very, very grateful to Diversion for keeping my ass in that seat long enough for me to hear the message, to see the similarities, to get my head out of my ass and firmly ensconce myself in the center of the herd. So please find the center of the herd. Thanks.